Welcome back. This week, our outgoing president granted pardons to 143 people on his way out the door, and among them was a West Suburban man named Craig Cecil, who had served nearly 20 years behind bars after being convicted of conspiracy to smuggle marijuana. Craig is with us on WGN this afternoon to talk about his pardon, his conviction, and his new life. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been quite a week.
Well, I can't even imagine. Congratulations, first of all. And second of all, I want to know how you're doing. I mean, is it real yet, or is it still kind of a surreal situation?
I'm still floating around, to be honest. Just a few minutes ago, I had a pullout since my prison sentence was commuted. I still have to serve 5 years of supervised release. And some friends offered to take me out for pizza tonight, and I had to look up in the conditions to see if it was okay to go to a place that served beer, and it is.
Oh, okay, so it's okay. That's within your right to do that.
Yes.
Pizza and beer, that sounds like a simple thing, but boy, it sounds like something to look forward to after what you've been through.
You can't imagine the prison food, so this is going to be fabulous.
Yeah, well, I've had some clients in prison, and I'm telling you, it's not good. When it's unidentifiable, you know it's bad. Let's talk a little bit about your conviction, Craig. Your conviction was something that it just seems like the sentence was so out of proportion for what the allegations were. So can you tell our listeners what you were convicted of?
The actual charge is conspiring to possess with intent to distribute marijuana, which basically, as you know, the legal definition is making an agreement with another person that crime of possessing with intent to distribute marijuana be committed. And what my action was is I owned a truck repair shop in both Lombard and Warrenville, Illinois, here in the suburbs of Chicago. And I repaired trucks, and amongst them, trucks for a Florida long-haul trucking company where the drivers used their trucks to haul marijuana. And they would smuggle the marijuana out of Mexico even, but by stuffing it within the walls of refrigerated semi-trailers. They would take out the insulation and stuff it in the walls. They would tear the walls all apart to get the marijuana out and then bring the trucks to me to fix them.
I see. And what was your sentence for that crime?
It was life without the possibility of parole.
I mean, that just seems so just out there. I mean, we hear about people who shoot other people and are out in several years. We hear about carjacking people who are out with very little bond. I mean, has this been recognized by every lawyer who's looked at this as just an excessive sentence for what you did?
To the lawyers, generally not, unfortunately. To common folks, yes, because unfortunately, the way our federal sentencing guidelines work,
yeah.
Although I was a first-time offender, I had no prior criminal history at all, and I was 42 years old. The way the sentencing guidelines worked, especially when I got my charge right after the events of September 11th, drug dealers were seen as contributing to terrorism, and just the structure of the guidelines led to all kinds of enhancements. For instance, I owned a gun, and I self-surrendered, and I had an Illinois firearms owner's identification card in my wallet. That became a sentencing enhancement because I had the capability of carrying a gun. And there's a whole list of those kind of enhancements, which left me with a sentencing guideline that computed to life imprisonment.
It just seems really unfair. And, you know, and the guidelines were supposed to, when they were enacted, try to make the sentencing fair and across the board. But you're right, when you have a base crime and then you have certain things that mitigate it and certain things that enhance it, some of the things that enhance a crime really don't relate to the culpability or morality of it. Just maybe even just the amount of money that could potentially be involved could drive up the number of years astronomically. But let's get to the you spent time in prison, and tell me how the pardon worked. Did you apply for a pardon through the normal course of applying for a federal pardon, or was it something that someone knocked on Donald Trump's door?
Actually, I'd applied under the Obama administration, but at the last moment, it got blocked by the prosecutor in my case. And that is unfortunately something that was common in that regime, going through the regular application process through the Office of Pardon Attorney. Now, in this case, now, I never made an application for clemency. But what I was taking advantage of is I was backed by many, many, many marijuana and criminal justice groups. And that led to Alice Johnson, who had previously been granted clemency by President Trump. She actually brought my request for clemency to the Oval Office.
Ah, okay. She paid it forward. And I know that you're associated with the Last Prisoner Project, which is an organization that does this kind of work, especially for marijuana convictions. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a fantastic organization with the goal of getting everybody convicted of possession of a plant, possession of marijuana, to get them out of prison and to help them in their reentry efforts afterwards.
Craig Cecil, his sentence was commuted by President Trump this week. You tell a story that was interesting. I understand you did get leave from your prison due to COVID, and you were out walking around with your ankle bracelet on, and you walked past a dispensary. And tell our listeners what your thoughts were as you are out of jail after all these years, walking around, and you see this dispensary.
Well, sadly, the way my home confinement worked is I was allowed to go home basically until the COVID was over. Then I would have to go back to a federal prison. And as you say, I walked down Western Avenue and I stopped right in front of a cannabis store. And I'll bet I easily stood there for 5 minutes watching people walk into the store and other people walking out carrying bags. And I just couldn't believe the feeling that came out of me. And so badly I wanted to say something and just no words came out. It was an emotion I couldn't believe that these people are enjoying doing what I'm going to have to go back to the penitentiary for.
Unbelievable. So tell us a little bit about how you got the call, how you were prepared for the call, and how this all went down when you received the pardon.
Actually, it was another tough situation because when I first got my life sentence, I was just determined that, you know, no court of appeals would allow that to stand. So I was really, you know, encouraged that, you know, certainly I would have to win this on my direct appeal. Well, lo and behold, no, I didn't. And then there was the post-conviction filing that I was sure I would win, and again, denied. Then a change in the law that I thought would help me, denied. Well, then I had a bunch of the activists telling me that they really believed that there was a good chance I would get clemency this time. And on Monday morning of this week, I got a call from several of the activists. Hey, the White House is asking for the best phone number at which to call you. So I told them all, and you can bet on this, the phone was never more than an arm's length away from me.
Right, right.
But I waited all through Monday, and all the news was saying that the announcement for the clemencies would come out on noon on Tuesday. So, of course, I waited all Tuesday, and noon came and went, and there was no talk anymore about clemencies. And there was some things that apparently Donald Trump was irritated about and the like. So, lo and behold, about 10:30 at night, I finally went to bed thinking that I've been let down again.
Right.
But after 11 o'clock, I received a phone call from Ivanka Trump, and after she introduced herself, I'll never forget the words that she says, "The president has commuted your sentence."
Oh, wow. Wow. This just has to be just an elated feeling of almost disbelief.
I'll be honest, I was up pretty much the rest of the night texting people and taking phone calls.
So after spending all this time in prison and, you know, surviving and being positive and keeping your eye on the ball here, you know, can you just tell us a little bit about how you maintained your optimism and you maintained it? Because, you know, being in prison is just, I mean, being there one day visiting someone is exhausting and difficult. To be there 20 years, I mean, what did you do to pass your time and to stay positive?
A lot of what I did is I was what they call in prison the jailhouse lawyer. I earned a certificate as a paralegal, and I did a lot of legal writing for a lot of people. So it was nice to have victories here and there to, you know, as a result of my writing, people were getting sentence reductions. They were going home. There was all things of that nature. So that helped me believe in the system. So I really believed in the system, knowing that a lot of people that operated within the system operated incorrectly. But I truly believed in the system. And I was just encouraged to know that the system had treated me wrongly, and sooner or later, you know, I could benefit from it. I could, you know, I could clear my name, essentially.
Craig, we only have just a few seconds left here, but what's going on in the future? Give me some bullet points about what you plan to do and how you plan to spend the rest of your life.
Actually, I've been hired by the Last Prisoner Project to do two different jobs. One is to help people coming out of prison after serving marijuana sentences, help them reenter into society, help them get jobs, help them, you know, to keep things straight for themselves. And secondly, I want to stand before our U.S. congressmen and all that and say that life sentences for marijuana are not theoretical. They actually happen. They even happen to first-time offenders, and we need to change our laws. For instance, had I been convicted of rape, my sentencing guideline would have been 33 months. But
wow.
Because I was convicted of marijuana, my sentencing guidelines were life. And this is evidence of a system that needs to change. And I want to work towards, you know, getting some equity into our criminal justice system.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story. And I want to wish you the best of luck. And I'm sure our listeners do, too. Craig Cecil, thank you very much and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Day.